One of the major concerns with climate change is with the oceans. As ice melts in the higher latitudes, more water ends up in the ocean, so the oceans rise. It sounds fairly straightforward, but there's a lot to the process, and our first guest has studied it extensively. David Sutherland is an associate professor in the University of Oregon Department of Earth Sciences. He studies the places where salt and fresh water meet, and he's not picky about whether the water is frozen or not. So he studies estuaries here, like at Coos Bay, and he studies higher latitudes as well, including glaciers and icebergs in places like Greenland. Dave Sutherland is our guest in this month's edition of our partnership with the University of Oregon, Curious Research Meets Radio. Dave, welcome back.
Thank you.
You joined us in November of 2016 to talk about the Coos Bay Estuary, but that's a day trip. How much time do you spend in the Arctic and the subarctic?
Yeah, so we usually go up to Greenland once a year in the summer, the time when you want to go there, and do a bunch of field work in the fjords surrounding Greenland. So that happens. I've been going to Greenland for the last 10 years or so, and then I've had other trips to other icy places like Alaska, just depending on the what projects I have going. So, yeah, a couple weeks a year, basically.
So this is the Oceans and Ice Lab, and is it fair to say that the lab's duty is to study all interactions between ice and salt water?
That's right. Yeah, that's our big focus is, you know, anywhere frozen water meets the ocean, we're trying to understand basically how those two parts of the climate system interact. The oceans, you know, obviously we live on an ocean planet, are a big part of the climate system, but so is ice in what we call the cryosphere, which is any part of the world that's frozen.
So it seems like this would have been a highly studied field, was it not?
Oh, it is. People certainly care about sea level rise, and there's good, sort of global estimates of how sea level is going to rise, and we try to predict, you know, by 2100 how much sea level is going to rise, but the details are really complex, and the interactions that we're studying in my lab are the processes that occur right where the ice touches the water. And so we're trying to understand, basically the feedbacks between the ocean and ice so that you might get some positive feedback cycle, right? So if you change the ocean a little bit, it induces a change in the ice sheet, and that leads to further change. And that's the sort of runaway positive feedback cycles that we worry about that would, you know, change the current predictions of sea level rise.
So it's a real rubber meets the road kind of thing you're doing here, where rather than just going, well, you know, less ice means more water, you're looking at, like, right at the edge of where they meet.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we have these fancy computer models, right, that predict sea level rise, that predict the weather, that predict climate out to 2100, but we still need the observations. We need the people going in the field to verify and validate these processes and make sure that we're representing them right in the computer numerical simulations that we use. And that's what my lab does, is we go out in the field, you know, even if it is just 2 weeks a year, we go out and collect a lot of data that we then spend the rest of the year analyzing and interpreting and thinking about.
So fairly intensive activity and a lot of improved technology I can see over the years. And what have been some of the highlights of the research thus far?
Right, yeah. So a recent project actually has been focused on icebergs. So these big icebergs calve off, in particular the Greenland ice sheet we've been studying. And these icebergs are enormous. They're, you know, I like to tell people up here at UO that, you know, we have Autzen Stadium, our big football stadium. If you covered that stadium with ice, you know, about 1,000 times as big as that football stadium. We're studying these icebergs that are, you know, huge volumes of water. And where they melt, it sounds pretty trivial. Ice melts in water. You put ice cube in your cup of water, it's going to melt. But these things are so enormous that where they melt actually matters a great deal, because they can put fresh water into the ocean at, you know, half mile down because they're so deep. Or they can float away from the Greenland ice sheet and go into the middle of the North Atlantic and then melt there. And so where they melt, where their distribution is, actually is a pretty critical thing. And we use, you know, satellites, drones, underwater subsurface cameras and sonar to collect all the data we can to try to understand how these things are melting and where they're melting and how fast they're melting.
I read your comment about icebergs being something like the middle child because once they're off the glaciers, a lot of scientists don't care about them.
That's right. Yeah, so typically, you know, I trained as an oceanographer, and we only care about the rivers entering the ocean or the fresh water coming off the ice sheet as liquid water. And that, you know, we certainly care about that because it forces the ocean and we think about that. But the icebergs were this just ignored part. And then as someone that studies the ice sheets, a glaciologist, once it leaves the ice sheet, you know, they don't care about it anymore. It's in the ocean, and it's done its, you know, as the iceberg calves off of a glacier, it does its part to sea level rise, right? Any more melting doesn't affect sea level rise anymore. Just like in your cup, right? If you ice cube in a cup, it doesn't, as it melts, it's not going to affect sea level. So they didn't really care about the icebergs anymore either. And so, but they actually still play a pretty critical role because of these feedbacks I was talking about. If where they melt actually determines how the ocean currents move in the fjords that connect the ocean to the glacier, as well as a lot of biological systems around Greenland and Antarctica, where actually most of the icebergs in the world's oceans calve off Antarctica.
Icebergs and oceans and glaciers are the topic for discussion here on the Jefferson Exchange in our Curious Research Meets Radio segment with Dave Sutherland, Associate Professor of the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Oregon of the Oceans and Ice Lab. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. How far and wide do icebergs roam once they've calved off a glacier?
Sure. I mean, most people probably, their best experience with icebergs, maybe watching the movie Titanic.
Sure.
And that's called Iceberg Alley. So a lot of the icebergs that calve off Greenland follow this circuitous route around the North Atlantic Ocean and end up off the coast of Newfoundland, off Canada, and they melt along the way. And so, you know, very few big icebergs end up down there. But it is a hazard to shipping and industry, and especially further development of natural resource extraction. So, you know, Canada and Greenland and Norway are pouring tons of money into offshore oil extraction these days, and it's a real industry, actually, iceberg towing and iceberg moving. And you wouldn't think that so many people care about icebergs, but there's a huge industry around them. So they go far and wide in the North Atlantic, and then around Antarctica, they mostly get stuck around the continent because there's a huge ocean current called the Antarctic Circumpolar Current that just goes around and around and around Antarctica that keeps them fairly constrained. But again, people in the southern hemisphere, excuse me, are thinking more about icebergs as sources of water.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, South Africa has seriously considered towing an iceberg to solve their water woes.
Oh, Cape Town's got that horrible problem,
right,
with the water.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's easier said than done.
Yeah, no doubt. How long can an iceberg last in the ocean?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, when a big iceberg calves off the Greenland ice sheet, we typically say it lasts 1 to 2 years, depending on exact route. It also depends how you think about this one iceberg. It starts out as this huge block, you know, sort of building or city block-sized iceberg, and then as it moves, it starts breaking up into smaller and smaller bits. And so this one iceberg can generate into thousands of smaller icebergs, which then break up themselves. And so it's hard to really track the exact lifetime, but, you know, 1 to 2 years is a good estimate.
So, Dave, there was one part in particular of your research that really kind of blew me away, and that was the idea that meltwater, as the icebergs melt in the ocean, can get trapped.
Mm-hmm.
So you have essentially these pockets of fresh water in salt water or near salt water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, the key thing to remember is that the ocean is layered, just like, you know, there's less dense water on top of more dense water, and that happens from the surface of the ocean as you go down all the way to the ocean bottom. Just like you have oil on top of water, right? You can see this interface. And so what happens if you put fresh water in a half mile down, really deep in the ocean, it's less dense, and so it wants to rise. So it starts, you know, it wants to go up to the surface. But as it starts to go up to the surface, it actually mixes and with the other water around it, and then so it becomes neutrally buoyant, and it just starts moving out horizontally away from the iceberg. And so you can have these layers of iceberg modified water that just radiate away from the icebergs at all depths. A lot of it concentrates at the surface, so stuff that melts off the top of the iceberg just pools on top of the ocean surface. But this is why these big icebergs are so important, is that they go down sometimes a half mile, and they can put that fresh water in really deep. And sometimes they're full of iron or other nutrients that can really catalyze biology of the ocean.
Oh, so change the processes that are going on around them, sure.
That's right, yeah.
Dave Sutherland's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the head of the Oceans and Ice Lab at the University of Oregon, where he's an associate professor in the Department of Earth Sciences. We're talking about icebergs and glaciers and things that go on in the ocean. where fresh and frozen water meet. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let's go from the children back to the parents, the glaciers. I know you track these in several places. The processes appear to be similar, but the topography can be so different. I mean, are there very, very different types of glaciers?
Sure. Yeah, there's, I mean, the biggest difference might be glaciers that end in the ocean. So we call those tidewater glaciers or marine terminating glaciers. And then there's glaciers, you know, that we have here in Oregon that end on land, alpine glaciers or just mountain glaciers. And so I think that's one thing that, you know, to keep in mind, that a lot of your listeners from Oregon might feel pretty disconnected from ice, but, you know, we have ice and glaciers in our own state.
By the hundreds, I noticed. I was looking for a little count. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and they've shaped many landforms in the northern part of our country. You know, there was a huge ice sheet that covered North America for a long time during the last ice age. So those are the two main categories. But then, you know, there's a rich diversity of glaciers, just like there's a rich diversity of trees or mountains or hills. You get lots of different fun shapes, and glaciologists have all sorts of interesting terms for these things, seracs and ogives, and, you know, these fun sort of lots of European terms that where a lot of the early research on glaciers was done.
When we talked about estuaries last time, and it was about the Coos Bay estuary in particular, mm-hmm. you were talking about the importance of the processes that go on where salt and fresh water meet, just in all estuaries,
mm-hmm.
And certainly where salt water and ice meet. Are the processes within those systems in the higher latitudes, are those actually changing as those regions get warmer?
Certainly the amount of fresh water that we're putting into the ocean is changing. And so, you know, the Greenland ice sheet is losing, you know, several hundred gigatons of ice per year, and that, you know, that's a lot of ice. If you think about what a gigaton is, it's, if you think about the Washington National Mall, if anybody's ever been to that place in the Washington Monument, think of a block of ice that's four times taller than the Washington Monument and covers the entire National Mall. That's a gigaton, and the Greenland ice sheet is losing, you know, a couple hundred of those per year.
A couple of hundred of the gigatons each year?
Yes. And so half of that comes out as fresh water, like liquid melt, and then half of that comes as extra icebergs getting calved off the ice sheet. And so we certainly see, basically it's an accelerated circulation in the fjords surrounding Greenland now. It's the same physics that's going on. It's just we're adding extra fresh water to it. And so you're basically ramping up a part of the circulation that has always been there. It's just we're adding a little bit of, a lot of extra fresh water.
But it makes sense then that the systems would change a bit, because if there's been something of a constant over the years of meltwater, then mm-hmm. when you increase that meltwater drastically, then the systems themselves can change.
That's right. Yeah, and the big thing around Greenland is that the bottom waters, or the deep waters around Greenland, the waters that are, you know, several hundred meters deep and below, are actually warmer than the waters above. And so when you ramp up the fresh water input from the Greenland ice sheet into the ocean, you actually start this sort of circulation that the surface water goes out and you draw more and more deep water in, and it just so happens that deep water is relatively warm, and so that drives even more melting. And so that's one of those feedback cycles that we get into that we worry about a lot.
Now, I'm going to ask you about something that wasn't part of your own research.
Sure.
The video from the Chasing Ice Project in 2012 that shows that massive movement of a glacier mm-hmm. breaking off. I just wanted to know if you could place that in context. That was an anomaly or a regular occurrence or something that is happening more these days.
Yeah, there's certainly, glacier calving, the process that leads to icebergs, is a natural process. And every so often, these big ice shelves, which Greenland has a few, Antarctica has many, will break up and a big ice shelf will fall off, and there'll be a lot of press about it. You know, it's the size of Rhode Island, and that's a natural process. But the frequency and the amount of ice that we're losing from both ice sheets, Antarctica and Greenland, is increasing. And so we're seeing these things happen more and more. And the catastrophic loss, or the not natural process, is when we actually lose an ice shelf or lose a floating part of an ice sheet all the way back to where it touches land, and then you can't recover from that. And so that's the part that's less natural, I'd say, and has something to do with anthropogenic climate change.
So over the years, you've been going to Greenland in the summer, for example. Do you notice differences just in what you're seeing there with your own eyes?
Yes, we certainly do. And we, you notice where the glacier is in terms of its location. You can see what we call the sort of the bathtub ring around the glacier surface where it's lowered. So as they retreat, as we lose more ice, they actually thin as well. And so you can see where the fresh rock is, where there used to be ice. And then you talk to the people that live there, the local Greenlanders, they notice these things. They know that there's more icebergs in the fjord. There's less sea ice that forms every winter so that they can't fish and hunt for seals on top of the sea ice as much as they used to. So there's certainly changes going on. And we care about it because of sea level rise and other climate things, but it really impacts the local people that live there. Even though I'd say they're pretty pragmatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll change their ways. Basically, they'll fish more from boats instead of from dog sled.
Oh, sure. So they have to change their lifestyle, but the rest of the world is changing as well.
That's right.
I have looked at your YouTube videos as well. You guys have some fun with that drone, don't you?
We do, yeah. So we have fun with it, and I like to say we also do a little bit of science with it. But it's pretty amazing what these drones can do today in terms of the ease of flight and the pictures we get. But we use a process called structure from motion that basically you take lots of pictures mm-hmm. of icebergs from above water, and we can recreate a topographic map of the iceberg from just photographs.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Just a couple seconds here, Dave. I want to ask you, I understand you have a climate mini conference coming up later this week at U of O. Can you tell us about that?
Sure, yeah. I'm teaching a class on ice in the Earth system, and about 18 students of mine, and then 40 other students from two other classes, one on public lands and one on environmental justice, are combining to present posters on many aspects of climate change and how it affects us as a society here at UO.
Okay, and can people come see that?
Sure, yeah, it's in the Student Union Ballroom. It's Thursday, all day, and then the poster session itself is from 5 to 7 Thursday evening. And it's free, open to the public.
All right, Dave Sutherland runs the Oceans and Ice Lab at the University of Oregon. He's an associate professor in the Department of Earth Sciences and our guest in this month's edition of Curious Research Meets Radio. Dave Sutherland, always good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks.